Good morning. It's time for In the Green Outdoors with Gail Martin and Carol Kelly. Each week, the ladies will bring you gardening and planting ideas, tell you about native Ohio plants, prairies and habitats, and great tips for everything in the green outdoors. This week with Carol Kelly.
Hello again, everyone. Well, as you know, this summer, Ohio is suffering under one of the driest summers on record. Combined with scorching late August heat, with numerous days with highs in the mid to upper 90s, our crops have withered under these conditions. In fact, dry conditions persisted for much of the state, exacerbating abnormally dry and drought conditions across much of Ohio. Although worst in the southeastern counties, rain has been all too scarce in Marion County as well. And the long-range forecast over the next couple of weeks isn't offering much in the way of rain. We only can hope that the corn and beans in our agricultural fields are not a total loss, and that the prairies in and around our county will recover by next spring. Now on to this week's segment of my series on plants and animals connected with our U.S. presidents. In last week's segment, I spoke about plants associated with presidents and some of their first ladies, and while I spoke of some of the trees planted on the White House grounds, there wasn't time to mention all of them, nor to point out other trees planted elsewhere in honor of presidents. So let me just mention a couple of those before looking into birds, fish, arthropods, and even fossils that have some sort of connection to our various presidents. The oldest trees on White House property are two southern magnolias, Magnolia grandiflora, planted by Andrew Jackson between 1829 and 1837. He planted them in honor of his wife, Rachel, who died 2 weeks after he won the election and before his inauguration. Alone, he left their home in Nashville, Tennessee for the White House, and he brought two magnolia saplings from the garden. Magnolias had been Rachel's favorite tree. Jackson planted them in her memory, and he never remarried. Those trees still bloom at the South Portico, and you can see them in the picture engraved on the back of a $20 bill. A honey locust tree in the Soldiers National Cemetery is known as the Witness Tree. It's the last living witness of Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address of November 19, 1863. In the years following the Civil War, more than 100 trees were planted in the cemetery, many to commemorate fallen soldiers. Kentucky, for example, planted several Kentucky coffee trees in honor of soldiers from the state. Marion Cemetery, by the way, has two Kentucky coffee trees planted along Delaware Avenue. The honey locust is the only tree, and indeed the only living thing, to have heard Lincoln deliver that great American speech that began 47 years ago. Seeds from this tree have been collected from it, and for a limited time, you may obtain a young seedling from the historic Gettysburg Adams County website. Let's move on to a discussion of birds. While not as popular overall as four-legged animals, many presidents and their wives have kept birds while in office, perhaps most notably nature lover and Audubon supporter Teddy Roosevelt, who not only owned several birds, including a hyacinth macaw and a one-legged rooster, but also kept a bird checklist of species he saw on the White House grounds. Canaries and various types of parrots, each species of which have been residents of the White House 6 different times, as well as parakeets, have been popular bird pets. Briefly, here are details of a few notable bird-president relationships. Several of the founding fathers shared their presidential homes with birds, starting with George Washington, whose wife Martha kept a parrot at their house in Mount Vernon. However, George preferred horses and didn't like the bird. Apparently, the feeling was mutual. Thomas Jefferson is said to have had at least 4 mockingbirds over the years, one of which traveled with him to France when he was ambassador. He often would write in his meteorological diary called his Weather Memorandum and mention the birds. 2 of his birds had received singing lessons before Jefferson bought them, and sang American, Scottish, and French tunes. One he called Dick was apparently his favorite. Whenever Jefferson was alone, he opened the cage and let the bird fly about the room. It would perch on his shoulder and take food from his lips. Often, when he retired to his chamber, it would hop up the stairs after him, and when Jefferson napped, it is said the bird would sit on his couch and sing to him. Dick also would accompany the violin when Jefferson played. Dolly, the wife of James Madison, Jefferson's Secretary of State, who became his successor to the White House, bought a green macaw for the White House. Rutherford B. Hayes also had a mockingbird that accompanied him for his entire 4-year term in the White House. However, he was more interested in wild birds. In 1885, an issue of Harper's Weekly carried the stray remark that, quote, "Ex-President Hayes says that there are 52 varieties of birds on his grounds, and that his son has collected 50 different kinds of birds' nests." Only a dedicated birder would bother making a yard list of birds, much less be able to identify 52 different species. Andrew Jackson owned a parrot that he named Paul, sometimes called Polly. Jackson was known for using expletives, and apparently his parrot followed suit. Paul was an African gray parrot, initially purchased as a present for his wife, Rachel, but Jackson became the parrot's custodian after she passed. At the funeral of Andrew Jackson himself, it is said that Polly squawked and squeaked and chirped and said a few bad words. Our 10th president, John Tyler, had a male canary, unimaginatively named Johnny Tye. Sadly, it died shortly after they tried to pair him with a mate, only to discover that it too was a male. Was it a case of a lonely broken heart? We'll never know. William McKinley had the most patriotic parrot. It could whistle Yankee Doodle. But no president matches Calvin Coolidge for sheer bird numbers. In a 1929 article in the American magazine, Coolidge's wife, Grace, explained that the couple owned a pair of canaries named Nip and Tuck, a white canary named Snowflake, another canary named Peter Piper, a yellow bird, no species given, named Goldie, a thrush named Old Bill, a goose named Enoch, a tupil, which is the colorful national bird of Venezuela, named Dufunny, and an unnamed mockingbird. Warren G. Harding had a canary named Petey. A few native wild birds have made it to the White House. President James Buchanan was the only bachelor ever to occupy the White House. Apparently some of his constituents felt that he was lonely, and so periodically sent him gifts, once sending 2 bald eagles. The eagles, obviously not suited for living at the White House, lived at Buchanan's home in Pennsylvania, where they were able freely to come and go. President Theodore Roosevelt, who by far had more pets of all kinds than any other president, and who we'll look into more closely next time, is said to have had a barn owl living at the White House. Dwight D. Eisenhower's parakeet, Gabby, died while Ike was in office, and so is buried in the southwest corner of the White House grounds. When Caroline Kennedy's pet canary died, it was interred nearby. So much for birds. There are various animal species named in recognition of presidents, so let's find out about some of those. Now, I'll remind you that scientific names are derived from Latin or Greek words that may be descriptive of the plant, animal, or whatever, and consists of 2 parts. The first, naming the genus to which the item belongs, and the second denotes the species or specific name. This specific name may recognize the person that first discovered and named the plant or animal in question, but may be given in honor of someone who is meaningful to the scientist doing the naming, and this name always takes the form of a Latin or Greek word. So although I always urge people to use the correct scientific names of plants when discussing any that are edible or medicinal, I mostly will spare you from hearing the often tongue-twisting, foreign-sounding terms of the various animals and things I'll be mentioning, since they most likely would be meaningless to most of us. If, however, any listener is interested in learning the exact scientific names of anything I describe, simply drop us an email at wzmo@roadrunner.com, and I'll be happy to reply. A parasitic wasp, named after George Washington, lives primarily in Costa Rica. Although there are scant taxonomic similarities between that insect and the father of the United States, both can claim large families. The diverse Heterospilus genus includes about 280 known species. Thomas Jefferson, due to his interest in natural history, has had a fossil named in his honor. English naturalist Martin Lister published a drawing of an extinct scallop's unclassified remains in 1687, and it became the first North American fossil to be noted in scientific literature. Like our third president, the mollusk called Virginia home, albeit during the Pliocene epoch, some 4 to 5 million years ago. But due to its prevalence in what became the Old Dominion state, C. Jeffersonius was named the official state fossil. There also are a badger, an extinct mammoth species, and a ground sloth named in Jefferson's honor. As a genus, Lecolna is an exclusive club. Only two species of parasitic wasp can claim membership. Alexandre Arsène Giraud, the entomologist who described them in the 1930s, frequently named new species after people he admired. So not only Abraham Lincoln, but other genera he named include Davincia, Shakespearea, and Beethoven. Few achievements were of more importance to Theodore Roosevelt than his work to conserve natural resources. Besides establishing the U.S. Forest Service and creating 5 new national parks and placing more than 230 million acres of land under federal protection, Roosevelt also shares his name with a tiny shrew that gambols in the moist savannas of Central and East Africa. He also has an ant, a deer, a fish, lizard, and a beetle named for him. So while his distant cousin Theodore is known as the naturalist president, Franklin D. Roosevelt was no slouch when it came to animal conservation either. After cruising the Clipperton, Coco, and Galapagos Islands with FDR in 1938, Smithsonian scientists wound up naming several new species after their host, among them a shrimp-like crustacean, a fish, and a worm. Commonly known as the bluegrass darter, Ichthyostoma jimmy carter dwells in the Green River drainage basin in Kentucky and Tennessee. That president's legacy includes expanding the national park system to include the protection of 104.3 million acres of Alaskan land. Another member of the Heterospilus wasp tribe, H. regani, resides in Costa Rica, with roughly 280 related species. Beyond its name, there's little to connect this wasp to our 40th president, although Ronald Reagan did visit the Central American country at the invitation of the president of Costa Rica in 1982. Like Bill Clinton, the beaded darter fish hails from Arkansas. Steve Lehman, the environmental scientist who described the fish in 2012, dedicated it to the 42nd president in honor of his environmental work, which included the preservation of millions of acres of wilderness and the enhanced protection of national forests. George W. Bush has a slime mold beetle named in his honor. Quentin Wheeler, a professor of entomology and of plant biology at Cornell for 24 years, named the species, as well as two others named after Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld. He explained in a statement in 2005 that the decision to name the three slime mold beetles didn't have anything to do with physical features, but to pay homage to the U.S. leaders for, quote, living up to the principles of freedom and democracy rather than accepting the expedient or popular. Next, although it would not be a compliment, the scientists who named a species of blood fluke after Barack Obama did mean it as such. Found in the lungs of Malaysian freshwater turtles, the creature is a study in resilience, according to biologist Thomas Platt, who helped discover the parasitic flatworm in 2015. Members of the species face incredible obstacles to complete their life cycles and must contend with the immune system of the host in order to mature and reproduce, said Platt. Obama is one of four presidents to have had species of fish named after them for their green credentials also. According to a researcher, quote, "We chose President Obama for his environmental leadership, particularly in the areas of clean energy and environmental protection, and because he is one of our first leaders to approach conservation and environmental protection from a more global vision." The researchers named the 5 newly discovered species of the darter, the smallest member of the perch family, after 4 presidents and 1 vice president. All but one happened to be Democrats. Barack Obama has been commemorated in the scientific names of at least 14 species, the most of any U.S. president. I don't have the details as to the why of most of these, nor the time to share them with you if I did. But among them are a trapdoor spider, a Cuban spider, several kinds of fish, a diving beetle from French Guiana, a blood fluke, as already mentioned, an extinct lizard, an Amazonian bird, a sea slug, a parasitic horsehair worm, a type of potato, a lichen species, and there is a horse who's named Barack Obama. In early 2017, Iranian-Canadian biologist Vazrik Nazari named a moss species of the genus Neopalpa after then-president-elect Donald Trump. The moth, which has been given no common name, is native to Southern California and Northern Mexico. Nazari was inspired after noting the striking resemblance of the yellow and white crown on the head of the moth to Mr. Trump's hairstyle. Well, this was a long program today, sorry about that, but it was fun researching, and I hope you enjoyed learning the details regarding our presidents and their associations with the non-humans of the world. Until next time, this is Carol Kelly, hoping we soon get some rain so we truly may say we live in the green outdoors.
And there's your show for the week. In the Green Outdoors is a production of WZMO Radio. The show airs Saturdays and Mondays right after the second cup at about 9:30 a.m. If you have a question or comment for Carol or Gail, you can email it to WZMO@roadrunner.com. Thank you for listening.